Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about how sugar can cause brain damage. But there's a food that can reverse it, according to the latest scientific research, University of California. Then we're going to segue into how chocolate, organic regular chocolate, which is very important as one of the natural plant sterols, can end up benefiting your heart from Cardiff University. Oh, we're also going to talk about how they can wipe out liver cancer cells in a particular nutrient. Now, right now, if you have cancer of the liver, the only therapy available is surgery. They can't really do chemotherapy on it, and it's not very successful. But this is University of Texas. Then we're going to look at how red wine is good for your gut. But is it really the wine, or is it the resveratrol in the wine? And then why not just take resveratrol by itself? Because you're going to get a whole lot more than you would if you take the wine. In fact, each morning when I'm making my combination, I make it about every 3 days. And when people at various events, like a retreat, they see me, I don't eat the regular meals. I just eat my breakfast nutrition and then one small meal later in the day. The rest is grazing, an apple, red pepper, whatever it might be, a little hummus. So the idea of sitting down to a big meal is just, it just doesn't work, and we shouldn't be doing it. We're doing it more because of conditioning. But I always have a lot of concentration from grape, and I did the measurement, and I found out that what I take in a single morning is equivalent to two entire cases of red wine. Now, I'm sure some people wouldn't mind having the benefit of drinking two cases of wine, probably at one meal, but it's not the wine, it's what's in it, and there's so many ways of getting it without the wine. I'll tell you about that. Then we also are going to explore how rosemary, which is very easy to grow in your backyard, it's very aromatic. But we're not talking about using it in a dish or like a pasta. Rather, we're talking about the therapy, smelling it, the aromatherapy. It really does something important, and that's from a university in the United Kingdom, Northumbria, and other issues we're going to discuss. Then from our audio file today, we're going to listen to a couple of clips that I thought you would find interesting. I mentioned yesterday that there was a one-time-only CNN correspondent actually in the Pentagon, standing right in the hole where the supposed plane went through. But he didn't find a plane. And I'll tell you what he did find, but you're going to hear him say it. And that's the only time that we've ever heard that. Also, two engineers, if we can play that, we're going to today. Yesterday we had a teacher on, a 35-year teacher, who believes in homeschooling, who stated that her own family were 7 grades ahead because of the quality of the home teaching versus the total reliance upon these absolutely worthless standardized tests. And because the school is rewarded, the teachers are rewarded, everyone is praised by getting higher grades on standardized tests. The question is, are you actually graduating critical thinkers? And the answer is no, and all studies show that. Yet in other areas of the world where it's not the testing that counts, but the depth of education, the knowing, they exceed us at every level. Just look at all of the engineers and the scientists. They're not coming from the United States. They're coming from Taiwan and India and China and South Korea. So she had some comments on this. Well, today I'm going to follow up with a math teacher who was very concerned about electromagnetic pulses. These are the invisible energies that are in a room. So when you look down at your cell phone, it comes right on. Well, how did that happen? Well, it happened because of a satellite. Well, isn't that satellite beaming an electromagnetic pulse? The answer is yes. Will that impact you? Yes, in a negative way. Absolutely. Are there good studies? Over 50 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showing it damages chromosomes, can cause cancer. So good for her, just like good for the teacher yesterday. But unfortunately, as you heard, as she would have kids play and play musical instruments, all the other teachers didn't like it, the school didn't like it. Let's hear what a math teacher says and what happens when she says it about Wi-Fi, how it can create the same impact upon a kid's brain as if they had a brain concussion. Wow. Also today, I think a critical report from The Hill, quote, clean water crisis threatens the United States. Now, generally, The Hill is rather conservative in its outreach on issues. Here, they're saying, quote, the situation has grown so dire that the U.S. Office of the Director of the National Intelligence now ranks water scarcity as the major threat to national security alongside terrorism. Quote, the United States is on the verge of a national crisis that could mean the end of clean, cheap water. Hundreds of cities and towns are at risk of sudden, severe shortages, either because water available is not safe to drink or because there simply isn't enough of it. I'll deal with that. And from Ambassador Chas Friedman from Counterpunch, the end of the American Empire. This is a really important historical lesson. Now, why would I offer this? Because time and again, you have the pundits who will tell you that America is exceptional. And if we're not leading the world, bringing peace, democracy, and freedom, boots on the ground, our technologies, that there would be absolute chaos. And that we don't intervene in other people's business. We've heard the spokesperson for the State Department saying that. And repeatedly, and then the American media, including the New York Times, parrots that. Okay, that's one side of it. Now I'll tell you the truth. A real history lesson today on manifest destiny. We hit all the different topics, and that's because our audience, which is the largest audience in the world listening to any radio program or radio station, Progressive Minds, and that's why we take on these issues, because you're saying you want to hear them. So let's go up to the issues that make a difference. First, we're going to begin today on looking at sugar. Now, we have an article that is constantly being updated over 40 years on the dangers of sugar. It's on our website, along with thousands and thousands of other articles, and it's a repository of quality information. This is from the Telegraph. Quote, researchers at the University of California found that fructose, a type of sugar naturally found in fruits and vegetables, but also present in soft drinks and sweets, damages brain cells and can lead to a wide range of diseases from diabetes and heart disease to ADHD and Alzheimer's. The scientists found a group of rats fed for 6 weeks with fructose spike water, the equivalent of about a liter of soft drink a day for humans. Then they put them in a maze, drank only water, and the rats who consumed the fructose took twice as long to navigate the maze as the water-only group, despite the same level of training, suggesting their memories had been impaired. So that's just one aspect. Now, we also know that there's some good news, and that's that DHA and omega fatty, 3 fatty acids, you can get from either fish, but you can get it from flaxseed, can help undo some of that damage. And so even though it does damage, nuts, seeds, and fish, like salmon, will give you the fatty acid that can help repair that damage. So that's important. Quote, DHA, that's your omega-3 fatty acids. When you eat walnuts and you have avocados and you're having other omega-3 fatty acids or fish oil, quote, DHA changes not just one or two genes. It seems to push the entire gene pattern back to normal, which is remarkable, end quote. And that is from Dr. Yang, the senior author of the study. So just remember, all of you who've been taking your omega-3 fatty acids for all these years, you've been protecting your brain. Now, how about this? We all have friends and family members who refuse to really do it all right. So if you could just get them each day to take the omega-3 fatty acids, that would be a big help for them. From Cardiff University, there's an article about the plant sterols. Now, you're going to get your plant sterols in a wide range of fruits, like pomegranates, one of the best, but also there are dark greens like wheatgrass. But one of the best is cacao, or you can also call it coca, and that's where you get your chocolate. And about 2 ounces a day of chocolate is great for you. It's great for your heart, for your circulation, for your brain. Helps repair DNA. Quote, combining fish oil and plant sterols offers effective defense against heart disease. Now, this is not the only study. I've reported at least 100 different studies that fish oils or fatty acid oils, either one, and plant sterols, meaning the more fruits and vegetables that you consume, the healthier heart. And that's crucial, because we all want healthier hearts. They found that an experimental therapy, quote, could wipe out liver cancer cells. A quote from University of Texas, Southwestern, a potentially new and safe way to treat liver cancer. Now, most people are not aware of this, but the sixth most common form of cancer in the world is liver cancer. And that's, you remember recently, it took David Bowie's life. Well, while surgery is currently the only effective treatment recognized by conventional medicine to wipe out the help the person who's got liver cancer, and that's partly because the liver can rejuvenate about 60% of it. So even if someone has had hepatitis or sclerosis or damaged it with chemical exposure, there still should be optimism, because done correctly, you can detoxify the liver, and then you can rejuvenate the liver. So that's the good news. Now, here's what they're saying. Quote, a new way to wipe out liver cancer cells without harming healthy cells, a fish oil component known as DHA, encapsulated in the low-density lipoprotein infamous for cholesterol transformation. Quote, this approach offers a potentially new and safe way of treating liver cancer and possibly other cancers. So, what they're talking about is DHA. The very same DHA that I just mentioned in fish oil was good for your heart. Now we're finding it's also good for liver cancer. So here's the issue. If a naturally occurring fatty acid found in nuts, like walnuts or fish, could help restore the cancer liver to a normal liver, could help with the heart, then why couldn't it prevent liver cancer? Because anything that's natural that reverses is also capable of preventing. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Gastroenterology. And by the way, I always recommend the natural omega-3 fatty acids 3 times a day, generally around 1,500 milligrams each time, for people with hepatitis B and hepatitis C, and with substantially improved results. So that's good. Red wine and your gut. And this was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And what it says is that 1 to 2 glasses of wine per day can be a super healthy way to help the bacteria in your intestines. And that's correct. And what we have found when they've done examinations of the beneficial bacteria, for example, in people who commonly drink wine, like in the Mediterranean regions. They drink it like you drink water. And a lot of times people are not aware of this, but they grow their own wine. Now, when I've gone into Italy and France and Spain and the other countries, it's very common to find people that have 5 or 10, one guy had 12,000 bottles of wine that he made himself from his own small vineyard. And they exchange bottles, and they're connoisseurs on bottles. And they don't like using the sulfates. They like it natural. They're far more sophisticated than we are about organic and sustainable and clean food. Far more aware of growing food in healthy soil and at the right time of... I never will forget. I was in Italy, and it was in the mountain area near the Alps, where it's very cool at night and very sunny in the daytime, very hilly, and I had a great run. I decided I was with some buddies and my brothers, and my buddies speak Italian. They're both from Italy. And so it was just the perfect situation. They would all ride in a Jeep, and I would be running. I'd run 20, 25 miles a day through these little hamlets, and you could, they're about 6, 7, 8 miles apart, 8 to 10 houses. And in one, a family invited us for lunch, and we had this wonderful long 3-hour conversation. That was their normal time for eating, socializing, playing music. One guy played the guitar. But then they wanted to get dessert. And in this case, I said, "Can I watch what you do?" And yeah. And so we went outside, and the man went over to a tree, and he's looking, and he's looking, and he's looking, and then he goes, and he holds each peach in his hand and lifts it up, drops it down, goes from branch to branch, and then he holds it, smiles, pulls it down. And he did this about 7 times, got each of us a peach, and I asked, "What were you doing?" He says, "You have to know when the peach is ready to drop. And when it's ready to drop, it's full of water and sugars, natural sugars. The natural sugars ripen it, and you can tell it's in the bottom." And I say, "You know, I do the same thing with tomatoes." He said, "Yes." He said, "You always have to hold the fruit in," and tomatoes are a fruit, by the way, "in your hand." And we went in, and, you know, and he put them on the plate, and that's the dessert. And that's absolutely normal, at least in the country, in the have fruit, not a cake or pie. In Germany, you eat, you know, a 3,500-pound cake. I've never seen dessert that big in my life. And that's where the coffee houses originated, in Germany, where they'd go in the afternoon and have this big piece of cake and coffee. That's also the most unhealthy food I've ever seen in any country. Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I'd have to, the most untasty food in the world has to be England. In fact, their high level of spicing is salt. I think salt and pepper, and that's it. Beyond that, they get confused. And there's just no good. I've never had good food in England. France, absolutely the best. Italy, close by. Spain, close behind that. Ireland, not so much. Scotland, forget about that. I think they just put a pound of butter on everything, and that's it. Not the healthy diet. But for fruits, wow. And you just don't get any better than that. But not always do they have that. But you'll see it in the health of the people, and you'll see it in the health of their food and the freshness of their food, and their knowledge of herbs is very common, just like in Japan and China and India, to use herbs in everything. In America, we don't use herbs in anything, you know, unless it's a dried herb out of something. You know, I just wanted to share that with you because I want you to get into the habit of using oils, essential oils, in a healthy way to help your heart. But you don't have to drink the red wine. You can have grape juice, fresh. Eat grapes. That's terrific, unless they're seedless. The seedless, you want the seed. You want to chew up the seed. You want the skin, because it's the seed and the skin we're getting most of your nutrients. You can have grape concentrate, and that's good too. Remember, concentrate, you don't drink like you would a juice. You just take like a teaspoon, because it could last you a while. And then the highest power, the most potent, the most concentrated, the most healthy of all is your grape powder. Because you've taken the water, wicked it away. You've taken all the all the moisture out, and you're left with about what was, the water was 97%, so it'd be like taking 98% of everything in a glass of wine and evaporating. What you're left with is really what is the healing power. Get it into your body, because, man, that benefits you. Benefits every part of your body. And finally, rosemary. I can remember at the beginning of my career, there was a very popular little book on Bach flower remedies. And I studied it, and there was a person who came upstate when I had the Fertile Earth Farm for 15 years up in Stone Ridge near Rosendale and Olive and all those other towns around Woodstock. And this person wanted to know, could they grow some stuff there, because he knew it was a really great teaching farm. It was an organic teaching farm. I said, sure. And I didn't pay any more attention to it, because I always had people coming up doing projects. And I just said, fine, I got something you can use, use it. And occasionally on a weekend, I'd check in, just see how they're doing. A guy did a goat's dairy there. Another one did a Essene bakery. And here's this person who had like 2 acres of plants growing in raised beds based upon Bach flower remedies. And then I watched them as they would take the herbs fresh, then they would dry them in the process, extract the oils, tiny little bit of oil, very little bit. You have a whole, like a bushel basket of herbs, you end up with like a 10 drops of oil. And then others, they would dry them and grind them and make them into potpourries. But boy, those oils were really powerful, and they were undiluted, and you would just take a drop. And I remember in the Bach flower remedies, if you're feeling foggy in your brain, if you're not really clear in your memory, you take rosemary, and you put some of that rosemary on a pillow at night. Well, now, that was a long time ago. They were right. In fact, the whole Bach flower remedy element and all the essential oils that have been around a long time, for thousands of years, absolutely right. This is from a study that was done at Northumbria University in the United Kingdom, and it was presented at the British Psychological Society's annual conference, that rosemary essential oil improves the ability of people over 65 to remember events and to remember to complete tasks and at particular times in the future. Well, that's improving cognition. That's very important. And this was a very important prospective study. To remember, do you realize how many hundreds of millions of people worldwide could benefit from this, from something as simple as just 4 drops in a steam diffuser, where you just smell it in the air? You could put it on your dining table, you could put it on your bedside table, and it makes all the difference in the world. So, the takeaway message is, if you're having trouble with memory, 4 drops of rosemary essential oil in a diffuser, and just let it kind of diffuse into the air. And diffusers are very inexpensive, $15-$20, you can get one. Or, if you don't have a diffuser, just maybe put 4 drops on a hanky and wear it up around on your front of your shirt or blouse, so you can breathe it in. Makes a big difference. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Now I want to share something on water, because we're just not getting this message. We seem to be living in a cognitive dissonant state. We're living where we do not have sustainable resources. We're living where the government is not providing guaranteed clean and pure water. We're living with the knowledge that the environment is depleting much of our water supply, but we're not moving, because it surely won't happen when we turn on the faucet that clean, pure water doesn't come out, but it's not coming out. Here's the latest from the Hill. Quote, "The United States is on the verge of a national crisis that could mean the end of clean, cheap water. The problem is being felt most acutely in the West, where drought conditions and increased water use have turned lush agricultural areas to dust. But dangers also look underground, in antiquated water systems that are increasingly likely to break down or spread contaminants like lead. The crisis, now this is what you got to listen to. Listen carefully to this. Quote, the crisis gripping Flint, Michigan, where the water supply has been rendered undrinkable, is just a preview of what's to come in towns and cities nationwide. Quote, we are billions of dollars behind where we could and should be. The person, Jared Huffman, who spent 12 years on a municipal water board before running for state office, people in the clean water world would tell you that they've been shouting about this for a long time. For much of the U.S., most people don't perceive any shortage, but we're going to talk a lot about shortages now. It's a huge problem nationwide. Perhaps the single biggest threat to the water supply, experts say, is the nation's aging infrastructure. Across the country, water is flowing through pipes that are long past their expiration date. Some of the oldest pipes in America were built before the 1880s, and newer pipes are just not being implemented. In fact, the newest pipes, many of them are 75 years old. So that's a huge problem nationwide. A lot of the water infrastructure now is 100 years old or more. Flint is just one example. Quote, there are thousands of systems across the United States that are having serious complication problems, serious lead problems. So why is that a big deal? Because lead water pipes were prevalent in the United States until the late 1980s, when the EPA first started setting policies to prevent lead from getting into the public water system. We have to build on the increased awareness that we have a right now to drink clean water, but you can't do that. You can't turn a blind eye to it, and we've been turning a blind eye because nobody wanted to put the money into changing the infrastructure. And now you have all kinds of problems in Lansing, Michigan, Flint, Michigan, all across the country, and more people around the United States are turning on their taps and getting toxic water. And in fact, it's really bad, going to get worse. So my suggestion is pay attention to the quality of your water or you're not going to have any. And that's the reality we have to face at this time. Before we go to our break, I want to share some insights. And recently, while traveling and in an airport, I saw a person talking about American exceptionalism, and how if we're not out there protecting the world and setting the right policies, then we're going to have chaos. And I was thinking to myself, my goodness, I wonder how many people watching actually realize it's because we're out there in the world that there is chaos, terrorism, and anti-American sentiment. According to Ambassador Chase W. Friedman, Americans like to forget we ever had an empire or claim that we had one. We never really wanted one, they say. Really? But we had manifest destiny. We prided ourselves in manifest destiny. We believed that it was our divine right to conquer, to lead, to rule. And we were the imperial power after England. It carried us well beyond the shores of the continent that we seized from the original inhabitants and also the Mexican owners. The Monroe Doctrine proclaimed an American sphere of influence in the Western Hemisphere. But we don't like limits. And so we decided the world is ours. In 1854, the United States deployed Marines to China and Japan, where they imposed our first treaty ports, somewhat like Guantanamo. These were places in foreign countries where our law, not theirs, prevailed. If they liked it or not, it was irrelevant. Also in 1854, U.S. gunboats began to sail up and down the Yangtze River, that's the jugular vein of China, a practice that only ended in 1941 when Japan and China both went after us. In 1893, the United States engineered regime change in Hawaii. When I was in Hawaii doing the national championships, I went to a museum downtown, a small museum. It was the Queen's house and around some government buildings, small building by any standard, but very pretty. And then you look at the history and you start realizing, my goodness, we stole Hawaii, all the islands, and we persecuted this woman. She had done nothing wrong, but she had resources. We won the resources. And it's all written. It's all, you won't read it in any history book that I know of, and yet it's all there in this one building. And so we won it, and we got it. And that's how we did everything. In 1898, we annexed the islands outright. And in that same year, we helped Cuba win its independence from Spain while confiscating the Spanish Empire's remaining holdings in Asia and in the Americas, Guam, the Philippines, and Puerto Rico. Do you have any idea how many people died at our hands? There's a photograph up on the internet of a soldier standing in what looks like a pyramid of skulls. Those were Americans. Those were skulls that American troops killed. I mean, it's huge. Tens of thousands in just that one area. And yet, that's what we wanted to do. We did it. In 1897, the U.S. Navy contested Samoa with Germany. In 1899, we took Samoa's eastern islands for ourselves, establishing a naval base at Pago Pago. From 1899 to 1902, Americans killed an estimated 200,000 or more Filipinos who tried to gain independence from their country from ours. In 1903, we forced Cuba to cede a base at Guantanamo to us, and we detached Panama from Colombia, because Colombia and Panama were one in the same country. In later years, we occupied Nicaragua, the Dominican Republic, and parts of Mexico and Haiti. Blatant American empire building of this sort ended with World War II, when it was replaced by a duel between the United States and those in our sphere of influence on one side and the Soviet Union and countries in its sphere of influence on the other. But the antitheses our earlier empire building created remain potent. They played a significant role in Cuba's decision to seek Soviet protection after its revolution in 1959. They inspired the Sandinistas movement in Nicaragua. And in fact, it was Augusto César Sandino, whose name the movement took, was the charismatic leader of the resistance in the 1922 to 1934 U.S. occupation of Nicaragua. In 1991, as soon as the Cold War ended, the Philippines evicted U.S. bases and forces on its territories. And spheres of influence are a more subtle form of dominance than empires per se. They subordinate other states to a great power informally without the necessity of treaties or agreements. In the Cold War, we ruled the roost in a sphere of influence called the free world. And free only in the sense that it included every country outside the competing Soviet sphere of influence, whether democratic or aligned with the United States or not. With the end of the Cold War, we incorporated most of the former Soviet sphere into our own, pushing our self-proclaimed responsibility to manage everything within its right up to the borders of Russia and China. Russia's unwillingness to accept that everything beyond its territory is ours to regulate is the root cause of the crisis in Georgia and the Ukraine. And China's unwillingness to acquiesce in perpetual U.S. dominance of its near seas is the origin of the current tensions in the South China Seas. So the notion of a sphere of influence that is global except for a few no-go zones in Russia and China is now so deeply ingrained in the American psyche that our politicians think it is entirely natural to make a number of far-reaching assertions. For example, listen to anyone in the major media and they'll say the following with no sense of irony. Well, the world is desperate for Americans to lead it by making the rules regulating global public goods, policing the global commons, and doing in the bad guys everywhere by whatever means our president considers most expedient. But it's wrong. Oh, America's losing influence by not putting more boots on the ground in more places. Bill O'Reilly. He's wrong. And the entire fascistic right and left that support that are wrong, including Hillary Clinton. Oh, but the United States is indispensable as an arbiter of what the world's international financial institutions should do and how they should do it. Really? The World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the European Central Bank, our Federal Reserve? These are completely criminal organizations. They've never done anything right, nor ethical, nor moral. They are solely extensions of those people wealthy and powerful enough to control their actions and benefit behind the scenes enormously profitable ways. And also, even if they change, American values always present universal norms, and therefore everyone should change their culture, their beliefs, their values to America's. What part of our values and beliefs should the world emulate? Our reality television shows? Our excessive need for overstimulation of violence? Our capacity to detach from the outcome of our actions, allowing a nation of youth to become obese and have heart disease and diabetes, our senior citizens to become disposable and thrown away as if they have no relevance because they're no longer earners? The last people in the world who should hold themselves up as a model for anything decent is America, because we represent none at this time. Even those people who glorify in Bernie Sanders, who may or may not sell out, we'll see shortly enough. Chris Hedges and others feel that he will. I'm not so certain, because I think maybe it's just entirely possible between he and his wife that they see that they have a whole giant movement, a young, more idealistic people behind them. But then he turns right around and his legions of young people are not looking at what he's doing. For example, Bernie Sanders, as of today, backs the kill list troops to Syria. That's correct. Towards the end of a town hall meeting in Philadelphia this just past Monday, when he was interviewed on MSNBC, he declared his support for the Obama administration's program of assassination by drone-fired missiles and its steady buildup of U.S. troops to strengthen Iraq and Syria. That's what we're talking about. He supports Saudi Arabia, the most terrorist, creating, funding, training, and destabilizing country in the world. He supports them. He supports the most expensive boondoggle jet, $1.5 trillion. Do you realize what that could do to improve the water conditions I just mentioned? You could change all the infrastructure. You could literally improve and make new every single water system in the United States. And you could see that every single student's debt in the United States is forgiven with just what has been spent on Bernie Sanders' plane and so forth. So we have all these American conceits, and they're delusional. They are all the more unpersuasive to foreigners because everyone can see that America is now in a schizophrenic muddle, able to open fire at perceived enemies, but delusional, distracted, and internally divided to the point of political paralysis. The ongoing sequester is a national decision not to make decisions about national priorities or how to pay for them. In effect, Congress has walked off its job. The media is missing in action, leaving decisions about war and peace to neocons, to globalists, to those supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other dastardly deeds. And so what are we supposed to do? Well, we had better understand our history of what we have done and what we continue to do. When you have over 900 military bases around the world, and we're the only country to do that, then our idea of empire is still strong. Congress is not going to change anything. It will require we, the people, to disengage from them and to put people in office who care about the people. I'm Gary Knoll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. Now we're going to listen to some audio clips in succession. First up, we want to hear from a math teacher raising concerns about Wi-Fi and comparing the effects of Wi-Fi to a brain concussion.
Good evening, everyone. Shelley McDonald, teacher at the high school. I'm here tonight. Well, I'm sure you all know why I'm here tonight. I wanted to express my disappointment in the school committee and in the administration for failure to communicate, for failure to answer my questions. I've asked many questions, and these questions seem like something that should be easily and readily answered by anyone who made the decision to put the wireless radiation into the high school, into all of the schools, actually. Now, I understand that the routers are in. I've seen them. They're not on. There is wireless radiation in the high school right now. There's actually a wireless router right next to my room, and I measure readings in my room every day, and I can tell you that they're quite high. They're much higher than I'm comfortable with, and when I went into the classroom to measure the router that is functioning all day, every day, it's 48 times higher than when I was standing across Route 1 from the cell tower with the 4G microwave radiation antennas. I think that's much too high for a classroom. I'm not sure how it's responsible to keep something like that in there. We wouldn't have a cell tower on the premises, I hope we wouldn't. So I'm not sure why we would put something so much more powerful in the classroom. Now, this week what I got in my mailbox was, I guess I'm a little bit nervous tonight, was something for concussion awareness for teachers. And I think that's important. It tells teachers how concussions could affect learning, the cognitive, emotional, physical things, sleep things that we can expect of our students and that parents and teachers should be looking for. I strongly urge this committee and this administration to do the same thing with wireless radiation. Because parents need to know what to look for. Teachers need to know what to look for. The cognitive and emotional and physical effects of concussions happen to be the same things that radiation sickness cause. Things from wireless routers, cell phones, cell antennas, things like that. Inability to concentrate, memory loss, difficulty handling stimulating classroom environments, irritability, headaches, dizziness, nausea, fatigue. There are others. But something like this could go a long way, and I would love the opportunity to make something like this up for the teachers, for the administration, and for the parents. And I'm not sure what's been going on in the way of parent communication and informed consent. As far as I can see, nothing, and I don't think anything has gone out to the teachers. I haven't seen anything. So I'm wondering when that's going to happen. I was so frustrated that I hadn't been getting my questions answered that I had to draft a Freedom of Information Act letter that I sent to Dr. Auger. So I'm hoping that will get some of these questions answered because there are things that we really need to know, the community needs to know, and we deserve to know. And that's all I have to say tonight. Are there any questions?
And for her efforts, there was an effort to suspend her. So that's the quality of local educational boards and other teachers. So who then is speaking on behalf of the health and welfare of the students? We need teachers and sharing information, posting articles, and getting that information, all types of information that's relevant, out. Now, let's hear from a CNN reporter who is actually in the Pentagon, not outside, in. And this was a short clip shown once, never again. It was scrubbed from their website and their archives. Fortunately, someone captured it before it was completely eliminated.
The Pentagon, CNN's military affairs correspondent, Jamie McIntyre. And Jamie, you got very close to where that plane went down.
That's right, Judy. A while ago, I walked right up to next to the building where firefighters were still trying to put out the blaze. The fire, by the way, is still burning in some parts of the Pentagon. And I took a look at the huge gaping hole that's in the side of the Pentagon in an but front. My close-up inspection, there's no evidence of a plane having crashed anywhere near the Pentagon. The only site is the actual site of the building that's crashed in, and as I said, the only pieces left that you can see are small enough that you could pick up in your hand. There are no large tail sections, wing sections, a fuselage, nothing like that anywhere around, which would indicate...
Okay, do you hear what he said? No evidence of a plane. Now, take a look at what we did. We took a picture of the Pentagon's hole where the alleged plane crashed. Now, then we looked at the plane and looked at its dimensions, the wing tips and the tail. If it actually happened that was what happened instead of a missile, then you would have had an indentation where the wings hit into the building. It would have left an impression. There are no impressions. None. Not anywhere where it should be. Well, how then does a plane at that speed hit a building and leave no marks? None. Just a hole. Unless we're detonations inside. We've already heard from Barbara Honecker how her research shows that that's exactly what happened. So that is an important piece of evidence that the public has not heard. Now, another piece of evidence, this is only about a minute long, two engineers, highly qualified, did a series of studies on Building 7. Here's what they have to say.
First time in history, steel skyscrapers collapse because of fire, three times in one day. So I'm taking time out of my busy day to try to put to rest one of the more moronic things I've seen on the news for the past 14 years. And that's saying something. Through my Facebook feed, I saw yet again that old, tired argument. Airplanes crash into two buildings. Buildings catch fire. Buildings collapse at nearly the rate of freefall. A third building, not hit by an airplane, catches fire and also collapses. This one literally at the rate of freefall. For the first time in history, steel skyscrapers collapse because of fire, three times in one day. I'm so sick and tired of this argument. Now, I'm not going to make any claims as to what did or did not happen. Although, if it was a conspiracy, other than the official one involving the 19 hijackers, I do care. But what I'm upset about is the absurd engineering argument that you guys are making. I'm not arguing the facts. Two airplanes did hit two buildings, and three buildings did collapse. But if you think the one caused the other, then you've been duped. This is a 110-story skyscraper. This is the top 15 stories. Do you see how the 95 stories below are supporting the 15 stories above? Okay, now, here I have an identical 15-story section of the skyscraper. Same structure, same mass, but nothing below it. And I want you to see something very interesting. If you drop these at the same time, according to the official story, this one will reach the ground at the same time as this one, essentially in free fall, as they put it. One has nothing below it. The other has 90,000 tons of structural steel supporting it. Check it out. This one obviously can't reach the ground at the same time as this one. Now check this out. Do you see the top 15 stories crushing the 95 stories below? No, you don't. The top block disintegrates by itself in the first few seconds without even impacting the building below. And then the building below begins to destroy itself. What you see are waves of explosions ripping the building apart, pulverizing nearly all the concrete to a fine powder, and ejecting the steel up to 600 feet in all directions. The top 15 stories couldn't do that in a pancaking collapse, and they certainly couldn't reach the ground anywhere near as quickly as this one, which has nothing but air below it. Your argument is invalid. Get over your cognitive dissonance. Find a shrink.
And he is joined by 2,000 other architects and engineers who study the truth. What we can say with absolute certainty is the official 9/11 report is inaccurate. And that's where we should pay attention. Now, I'm concerned that we're not hearing the full truth about Hillary and Bill Clinton's background. So we're going to play you a short piece on the Clintons and just give you a few of their actual scandals that they were found guilty of, and because of their favoritism, cronyism, and how they actually dealt with people once they were in a position of power. Let's listen in.
After the inauguration in 1993, the Clintons fired the White House Travel Office employees, allowing their wealthy Hollywood friends to take over the lucrative travel business. This led to investigations by the FBI, DOJ, GAO, Oversight Committee, and the Whitewater Independent Council. The Clintons claimed the firings were due to financial misdeeds, but the employees were cleared on all counts. Hillary Clinton allegedly played a central role in the firings, yet in her sworn testimony, she claimed she was not involved. The independent counsel found this to be factually inaccurate and that she made factually false statements. The Clintons were forced to remove their friends and reinstate the previous employees. Vince Foster, the longtime friend and companion of Hillary Clinton, was significantly involved in several Clinton scandals. Due to the strange circumstances surrounding his death in 1993, an investigation ensued. Before the police arrived, Clinton staffers illegally removed boxes of documents on Whitewater and presumably Travelgate and other sensitive issues. President Clinton put his wife in charge of the most expensive program in the country. There was a national outrage that the unelected, unqualified First Lady was going to design America's healthcare system. In a 1993 interview, Hillary Clinton admitted, "I am not an expert on healthcare. I'm not somebody who has studied it." Hillary Clinton kept the Presidential Task Force on National Healthcare Reform shrouded in such secrecy that a federal judge threatened to hold the administration in contempt. 2 years later, the healthcare plan was a 1,342-page nightmare, including gatekeepers, health alliances, purchasing cooperatives, new and higher taxes, and restrictions on choosing doctors. Physicians, hospitals, large and small businesses, insurance companies, Democrats, Republicans, and the general public rejected the program, and it failed disastrously. The General Accounting Office put a price tag of $32 million on Hillary Clinton's healthcare fiasco. For dishonesty, Hillary Clinton and others were fined $450,000. Court costs to taxpayers were $725,000. In 1996, with Hillary Care fresh in their minds, Americans voted both the Senate and the House into Republican hands for the first time in over four decades.
We're only playing short little pieces because the whole piece is an hour long. But the travel gate was important because they fired all the people in the travel gate, but they went one step further. She claimed that the man who had headed the travel agency in the White House and who had, under multiple presidents, had conducted illegal activities. And he was indicted, he was put on trial, and he was found completely innocent of all charges. And but he said that it destroyed his reputation, destroyed his faith in government. And but that's one of those little forgotten parts of the Clinton movements, how they move. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.